Okay. Well, good morning. We'll go ahead and get started. And I'm happy to have joining me today Laura Jones, who is a research fellow with the Mercatus Center, and Mike Ralston with ABI. As governor, I am committed to eliminating red tape throughout state government. And that means continuously looking at ways to make state government smaller, smarter, and more efficient. It's another way to ensure Iowa taxpayers' dollars are being carefully managed. Today, I'm sharing some exciting research from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University called State Reg Data. This is a research platform that's used to analyze and qualify state regulatory frameworks. It also allows Iowans and others to quickly analyze state regulations and identify specific industries most targeted by excessive regulations. The center's analysis of Iowa's regulations tells us what we already know, that we have too many onerous regulations in Iowa, and this needs to change. I've spent years working to cut red tape. We've had some progress that's been made since 2011 when we signed an executive order requiring all new regulations be justified by a job impact statement. 1 year later, I helped pass a law that requiring all agencies to review their administrative regulations every 5 years. And really, that action was put in place to help remove rules that were outdated, redundant, maybe inconsistent or incompatible with law or agency practices. I'm pleased to report that Iowa agencies are completing that five-year review process. They're actively looking at rules that they need to be fixed or eliminated, and this is just another step forward that will help us make Iowa more competitive and one of our top four priorities. I believe this new research platform can help take our efforts to the next level. Right now, it would take one person about 563 hours, more than 14 weeks, to read all of Iowa's regulations end to end. And that's more than 10.1 million words for more than 160,305 state restrictions alone. That's also not including restrictions that apply under federal laws, and that's obviously just too much. Using the state reg data, we'll be able to run an analysis comparing regulations across various industries in under a minute. We know regulations play an important role in ensuring the well-being of Iowans, so we must balance ways to cut through red tape while still doing everything we can to maintain the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens. Using this new tool, we'll be able to unleash even greater opportunities for Iowans who struggled with excessive and unnecessary regulations in the past. And now I'd like to turn the podium over to Lieutenant Governor, who will explain a little bit more about Iowa's efforts to cut our red tape. Lieutenant Governor?
Thank you, Governor. As the Governor mentioned, we are committed to rolling back excessive regulations that can make government burdensome to our citizens. In addition to the state reg data tool, we want to take this opportunity to remind everybody of Iowa's administrative rules website. That's rules.iowa.gov. This website allows Iowans to make comments on pending rules. This award-winning website helps ensure that we as a state do not add new excessive rules and regulations while we simultaneously work to eliminate excessive regulations that are already on the books. We encourage everybody to actively check this website and proactively contribute to our rulemaking process. We really do want to hear from you. Tools such as the ones mentioned today give citizens the ability to be more engaged and informed in the governing process. Unleashing opportunity all across the state requires the continued engagement of our citizens. I will now turn it over to Laura Jones from the Mercatus Center, who will further discuss their efforts to help governments analyze regulatory burdens and reduce state regulation levels to cut red tape. Laura?
Thank you very much, and thank you, Governor and Lieutenant Governor, for inviting us here for this exciting announcement that Iowa now has a regulatory count of 160,000 restrictions. I think it's that time of year when many of us recognize and kind of renew our commitment to moderation after perhaps overindulging a little bit during the holidays. And there's a lot of value in moderation, of course, and there's value This idea of value of moderation applies to rules, too. There are many good rules that do good things, like make us safer and protect the environment. But taken to excess, excessive rulemaking has a negative impact, a very negative impact on things we care about, things like job creation and our pocketbooks, productivity, and also creates a lot of stress for, particularly for small business owners who are often on the front lines of complying with all these government rules. There was a recent study done by one of my colleagues that looked at federal regulation, and if federal regulation had been kept at 1980 levels, the economy would be 25% bigger. That's $13,000 per capita. And it's really not a stretch to say that that kind of growth impact applies here in Iowa as well. So the first step in moderation in rulemaking is knowing how many rules there are. And I really want to congratulate you, Governor, for the work that you're doing in this area and today's announcement for the state reg data base. To know that you have 160,000 regulatory restrictions on the books is a very important first step. Iowa is the fifth highest of the 20 states that Mercatus has looked at with respect to regulatory restrictions. And I think you're absolutely right when you say that this has the potential to unleash a lot of prosperity and growth in the province. I want to just tell you a very quick story about the province of British Columbia, Canada, and how they used regulatory counts to take things to the next level. 17 years ago, the province of British Columbia was struggling under the weight of way too many regulatory restrictions, and including things like rules telling restaurants what size television sets they could have, or rules telling golf course owners how many par four holes they could have. It was really ridiculous. Even the kids weren't exempt. They were told they needed not one, but two permits to take a tadpole to show and tell. So things had gotten pretty ridiculous. And fast forward to today, the province of British Columbia has cut its regulatory restrictions by 48%. That should give you hope that big things are possible. And they did it while maintaining very high environmental and safety standards. How did they do this? Essentially, they started where you're starting. They started by figuring out how many regulatory requirements they had, and then they set a target to reduce those restrictions, not by 50%, but by a third. They did that, and then they accomplished even more than that, and they've now cut the number of restrictions by 50%. And it was a very cost-effective way to stimulate the economy. Beyond that, it reduced a lot of frustration among those restaurant owners who were being told what size television sets they could have in their establishments. So, Governor, again, I think you're absolutely on the right path, and this has the power to unleash opportunities across the state, and I really want to congratulate you on today's announcement and offer that if there's anything else that Mercatus can do to help you along this path, we're very willing and able to do that. Thank you very much.
Morning, everyone. My name is Mike Ralston, and I'm president of the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Most of you know that ABI is Iowa's oldest and largest statewide business organization, and I think my job today is to talk about the real-world impact of some of these things. And Governor, you and the Lieutenant Governor have been terrific leaders on this issue. The great thing about regulatory reform is it's an impactful issue. It's not a partisan issue. It's not very sexy or glamorous, but it really has a lot of impact in the business world. Iowa companies spend literally millions of dollars each year on compliance, but that's okay. It's a necessary cost of doing business. As the governor and lieutenant governor have said, there's a reason we have rules and regulations. That's to protect the health and safety of Iowans, to create a level playing field for Iowa businesses. Nobody wants to get away from that. But I'll highlight three things that the governor and lieutenant governor have done or that they have focused on that make a difference. One is the jobs impact statement. I think you all know that a few years ago, Iowa instituted a jobs impact statement process for each proposed rule. That's great because it gives businesses, and all Iowans really, an opportunity to see what the ramifications of the rule will be, to have some input on what the rule, how it will look and what it will do. That's terrific. The second thing, the five-year review of rules that you've heard is a big deal. It's just common sense that we want to review these things. The Mercatus Project is a terrific resource to help get that done. The first review is coming to fruition just about now, so that's exciting. And it will hopefully help us know when we duplicate rules from the federal government or we have rules that are inconsistent with technology, those sorts of things. And last, the Lieutenant Governor mentioned the website, rules.iowa.gov. We're fortunate at ABI that we have some people on staff that like nothing more than to read the Iowa Administrative Bulletin. Not all Iowans do, and so they can go to that website, and I've done it, and I'll bet some of you have done it, put in a word or a topic and research the issue. It's a big deal. It makes government open to all Iowans, and that's terrific. There have been some specific examples of rules that have been reviewed that have made a difference for Iowa businesses and really for all Iowans. These three things help make that happen, and so, Governor, we're grateful. Thank you very much.
Mike, we're appreciative to ABI and all your members and the impact that you have on Iowa's economy and on employing Iowans in every single corner of the state. And as we indicated, we want to continue to be a partner so that we can have the most competitive business environment in the country and really work with your members to help them continue to grow and expand and, more importantly, hire Iowans in our great state. So with that, we will open it up for questions.
Yeah, it's the reg database that we look at, and so literally counting the shall nots, the musts, these kinds of statements electronically, and what we've looked at 20 states so far. Mercatus plans to do all of the states, and when we look at those states, and so it's an apples to apples kind of comparison, Iowa is the fifth highest of the ones we've looked at. And just to give you a sense of the difference, so Iowa's at 160,000 regulatory restrictions. New York is the highest at over 300,000 regulatory restrictions. Arizona is coming in at a much lighter weight at 63,000 regulatory restrictions. So that just gives you some sense of the range of restrictions in the various codes.
They can probably make that available to them.
Yes,
too,
and my colleague... My colleague Bryce is here with me, and he has a copy of the chart that has the data, as well as a copy of the report that's released today that has more information and more breakdowns by sector and how the rules are and which areas the rules are coming from.
Mr. Ralston, can you name one or two particular regulations, like the tadpole thing?
Like the what, Joyce?
Tadpole.
Oh, the tadpole thing. I'm not familiar with the tadpole thing, Joyce, but I need to study up on that. Well, one example I'd give you is there were some rules related to the state's unemployment insurance trust fund. Iowa Workforce Development was terrific in seeking stakeholder input to make a change in that rule to protect Iowans. There's a reason, again, that we have an unemployment insurance system, and that's because we want Iowans to have some recourse if they lose their job. Employers pay that money. The work that was done protected both Iowans and employers, but it greatly streamlined the process whereby the money is collected and made sure that fraud was taken out of the system. That's a specific example. There are several examples involving the Department of Natural Resources. I'm going to try to remember when I tried to make some notes. Had to do with the way metals are classified. Ended up being very duplicative. Director Gipp and others were helpful in seeking input from the private sector so that we could make the needed clarification, but again, also protect the environment and protect the safety and welfare of Iowans.
Do you have something for the future that
you're trying to get rid of? I'll bet we do, Dave. So I can get you some more information. I'm looking at our staff now. We'll try to get you some more information.
Why does Iowa have so, if you're looking at the fact that Iowa has the money, why does Iowa have so many? Does it have anything to do with the fact that we have large agricultural industry here, large financial services industry, insurance industry? What's the answer to that?
Well, I think when legislators are passing legislation, it's probably well intended, and when you stop to look at it holistically and see the total impact that it starts to have on business and industry, especially small business and startups who don't have the resources to really implement or comply or do the background and what's required to make sure that they're adhering to the regulatory or the regulation that's put in place. And so that's why, you know, with all new regulations moving forward, we thought it was really important tool for lawmakers to provide them with all of the information so that they're not only looking at what they think is a regulation that needs to be passed, but also as part of that process, they're looking at the impact that that will have on job creation going forward. And so they're making a more informed decision when they're deciding whether they should pass that or not. That's the reason that we did the five-year review, because sometimes, I mean, things change, legislation changes, technology changes. So it makes a lot of sense for us to, on a regular basis, 5 years, take a look at the, by agency, the existing rules and regulations and see if they still make sense, if they're outdated, if they're conflicting with some other sections of the code. And as Mike indicated, we're now wrapping up that process. And so it's nice. We appreciate the Mercatus study, so we have we know where we're at, we know where we're starting from. We'll take the results from the five-year plan, and we'll move forward with that. And it does it agency by agency, I think, so that really gives us a good idea on an agency-wide basis.
Can Laura say, can you tell us what the biggest focus was of this? Was it safety or health, or was it environment? What was the big, if you studied all of these, what was the biggest focus, and what was the biggest?
So the data is broken down by the top 10 regulators in Iowa, and again, my colleague Bryce has detailed information of the top 10 regulators, which he can provide you, as well as the industries that are most affected. And so food manufacturing, ambulatory healthcare services, these are things that are at the top of the list, but there's a whole long list of industries that are affected by these things, and we've got detailed information on that for you. But one other point I want to make with respect to this, apropos of the question about the tadpoles, is that the tadpoles and the restaurants are fun examples. That's why I use them in my presentation. But the real challenge with regulatory burden is the accumulation.
Right.
And so it's not any one. Those are the fun ones to talk about. But I work with small businesses often, and I'll say, you know, they'll tell me the regulatory burden, the red tape, is just too much, and I'll say, well, can you give me an example? And often, actually, they can't. It's like, well, they'll say to me, that's like saying, here's a stack of things on my desk I need to fill out with. Tell me which one I can eliminate to make my life better. It's kind of like death by a thousand cuts or being swarmed by mosquitoes. It's hard to point to the one mosquito that's the problem. So the nature of the problem is such that it's important to have a measure of the cumulative burden so you can track that over time. And I just wanted to make that point because I think that was very important in British Columbia's case.
And your tool allows us to do that. I mean, that allows us to do that.
When the Branstad Reynolds administration started in 2011, you said this is one of your goals. Here we are 7 years later, and you say now we're at a starting point?
Oh, no, I didn't say that. I ticked off things that we've done. So as you hear me say often, we should never be satisfied with the status quo. There's always things that we can do better. And so we did the job impact statement. So that's new rules going forward. So that addressed that. We did the five-year review. We're just in the process. So that'll give us some idea if we've, you know, where we can do better or where we have done better. And this now, in a more efficient manner, allows us to see where we're at on an agency by agency in a relatively short time frame, take a look at those, and really take the next step to make sure that we're not that we're using moderation. I think that's another key term that we need to take away from this press conference. It's not about wiping out every single rule and regulation, but it's about finding the balance to make sure that we're protecting the safety and health of Iowans, as well as making sure that we're not creating, you know, just unsustainable burdens for especially small business and startups, because we want to encourage them to grow and expand in the state. Well, let's just, we'll get to it, so. Okay.
The press release is under the new state data platform, users will be able to run an analysis comparing regulations across various industries in under a minute. What does that do as a business?
I don't know, Rod. I think speed is always helpful, I guess, but when I go to the website and I put in something, you know, the website works pretty well. If it makes it faster, I guess that's good, but the fact that we have that website is
tremendous. You get an analysis comparing regulations.
Oh, I see what you mean.
That's your.
Oh,
yeah.
I would say, though, before Laura speaks, that is important.
Yeah.
If you're in business, you want to know what's happening in other industries because it might have an impact on your business. That is important. That comparative data is important.
I think one of the critical things is it's about accountability. And so when it comes to, I often compare it to taxes and spending. When it comes to taxes and spending, we have a lot of transparency. There's a lot of accountability. If spending goes up, I can ask politicians, what did we get for that additional money we spent? But in the regulatory arena, we've had so little transparency that we haven't been able to ask those questions. And whether you think the level of regulation in Iowa is too high or too low, that level of accountability is important for everyone. And certainly that's the way British Columbians used it and saw it, was now we can say, if we've added 5,000 additional safety regulation, what additional benefit are we getting for that? What additional cost are those regulatory requirements put in the system? These are questions we couldn't debate or talk about before because we didn't have any numbers, which is kind of incredible when you think about how important it is, and yet you compare the fiscal arena to the regulatory arena. So that's really what this is about.
Well, I just want to say thank you again. I think it's exciting. I think anytime we can add tools like that to the toolbox to help us streamline and have our government be more effective and efficient is always a good thing. Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
The Trump administration put out guidelines last week on work requirements for Medicaid. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I'm focused on Future Ready Iowa Act, and that'll be the legislation that we'll be filing, because what I believe that does, that piece of legislation, will really help provide opportunities for Iowa. And so in a sense, that's what we're doing. I think we've identified about 127,700 men and women who have an opportunity to have a great career, get a skill, and match them up with a job. So, that's something we can look at down the road, but they're almost two separate issues that are working towards the same goal. And I'm focused on the Future Ready Iowa initiative right now because, in a sense, I can help really provide an opportunity, a support system, work with employers across the state with the Employer Innovation Fund, and help Iowans get the skills, go back to school to get an apprenticeship, to help get a great career, to land a great job, and that's what we're focused on. I don't understand why. We'll take a look at that down the road, Kay, but we just got that, and what I'm focused on right now, as I said, is the Future Ready Iowa initiative, because I believe it will help individuals like that. It will help Iowans go back to school to get a skill and become an apprentice and really fill the jobs that are available today, over 50,000 jobs every day all across the state. So it doesn't, we'll take a look at that and see what that entails. Right now, I'm focused on Future Ready Iowa because I think that's another path that we can really help accomplish opportunities for Iowans, and that's really what this is all about. Well, I'm not going to put a timeline on it because right now, I'm going to say it one more time, I'm focused on working with our legislators to pass what is my probably number one priority, and that is Iowans, unleashing opportunities and providing our employers with the workforce that they need to innovate and grow and expand. And Mike can attest to this. I hear it every day. And if we want to grow this economy and help raise Iowans' wages and have them have a great quality of life, that starts with a job. And so I'm committed to helping through a process help make that happen. And so that's really what I'm focused on. We've been working on that for a long time. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it will have benefits across the board for Iowans, employers, our economy, everything, schools, everything. So just a second. Okay. Okay. All right. Is it on this?
Okay. Mary Kramer came out with recommendations on Friday. Where do you go from here on that issue?
Well, first of all, I want to just thank Ambassador Kramer for volunteering her time and her expertise on this really important issue. As I said, in the condition of the state, we have an obligation to lead on this, and we're going to do that. So I think it's really important that we make sure that we have a safe workplace. Everybody should be entitled to go to a workplace that they feel safe, and they need to understand where to go if that's not the case. It starts with each one of us. It starts with changing the culture, but there's still bad actors out there, so we have to make sure that they have a clear path to reporting and to really making sure that it's investigated. And so I think that the Senate should move forward with the recommendations that Mary has put forth. And we have a complaint process through the executive branch, so I would encourage them to do the same thing. She also said that it's important that we work on this collectively, and I think that's really, really important that we all make sure that we have, that we're playing a role in making sure that we maintain a safe environment, and that there's every person that's employed here knows what that path is, if that's not the case.
Governor, can you provide assurances to Iowans that they won't have something like a nuclear missile alert like happened in Hawaii? Have mm-hmm. you talked with people mm-hmm. from Homeland Security?
I did. I tell you.
What can you tell us?
Yeah, okay. Well, Bill, I talked to them as soon as I saw that, because I can't imagine the fear and the angst and the anxiety that they were feeling. So I called Jake right away, where is Jake, and asked him to contact Director Scouten to see what our procedures are. We have a secure process in place. We have multiple validation steps throughout the process so that the messages are accurate and they're appropriate. The other thing that he does, is that he makes sure that only the people that have been trained for the system have access to the system, and they have multiple training sessions throughout the year. So I felt very good with the report that I got back from Director Scouten on the process that we have in place.
And that's specifically for the kind of alert that went off in Hawaii, specifically for
Well, for any type of an emergency alert like that. So the fact that we have multiple validation steps, I think, is really important. The fact that we have ongoing training for the individuals that are responsible for doing that and making sure that the messages are accurate and appropriate.
One of the things that happened in Hawaii was it took 38 minutes to send out a subsequent message saying, hey, not.
Yeah. I asked that too, and his answer was yes. So he assured me that, you know, that that they had steps in place to make sure that that didn't happen, but they also have steps in place that if something did go out that they needed to walk back, they could do it immediately. So I felt very confident with the report that Director Scouten was able to relay to me through my chief of staff, Jake Kinster.
Governor,
yep.
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 Yeah.
Yeah, well, as I indicated, you know, this is something that's really important to me, and more importantly, it's important to Iowans all across the state, and we're working on it every day. I met with Mike Randall again this morning, who is bringing people together to really sit down and talk about the processes that we have in place. So in the condition of the state, I talked about changing leadership and bringing in a new team, to taking a look at the system and what we need to do to make it better, to make it sustainable, to make sure that, you know, we're providing access to quality care for all Iowans. And so he had talked to Director Foxhoven this morning, and they'll be bringing people together within the next week or two to start walking through just the processes and how we can make sure that we're, you know, 600,000 people that are in this. That's 600,000 people that we have a responsibility to provide quality access to. That's a large number of Iowans. And so we're able to, I think it was about 200 that they had. And so at least we have a group now that we can take a look at them individually, take a look at that process to make sure that it's fair and that it's easy to maneuver in. So we've got, I mean, a number, I think, that, you know, we can be able to really work on continuing to make the process better. And when I talked to Director Randall and Director Foxhoven this morning, they're committed and working on it every day. So we're going to continue to see to improve that process.
Two more, Caroline. Legislation that would carve out the long-term services, the
Well, I've talked to Director Foxhoven and Director Randall, who are in the system, and we continue to work with caregivers across the state also. They believe that it should stay under the managed care the way that it is. But so part of what we have to do, I think, is to address some of their concerns that I talked about, and that's making sure that we have timely payments to make sure that we're clear on what is covered and what isn't covered. With fee-for-service, we had a lot of things being covered that should not have been, that weren't being covered accurately. I think it was about $300 million, annually. And so we want to make sure that it's fair. We want to make sure that it's streamlined. But we want to make sure that we're also paying for the fees in a timely manner. And so when I talk about the process, that's another, Michael have subgroups of people that we can really work on and talk about where the barriers are, what are some of the issues, we heard a couple this morning. I met with legislators this morning to talk about it. And so I asked Mike about that when I met with him. So we're just gonna continue to find out what the issues are as we meet with Iowans, as we meet with our providers across the state, as well as the MCOs, and make sure that we're holding them accountable with a system that addresses all those needs. Barbara, I gotta spread these questions out, so. Well, we're holding meetings, but I'll let the Lieutenant Governor talk about what he's doing. So I just announced it Tuesday, though, so remember.
So there'll be a lot more on that in the weeks and months to come. There's a lot of great work that's being done by various organizations already, and what we want to do is take some time to have some discussions with them and understand what it is they're working on, how we could elevate that work and enhance it. But we're really focused on finding ways to encourage investment all throughout our state, growing the state, not just in terms of population, but in terms of growing the next generation of leadership, and then, of course, connecting Iowans, connecting rural Iowa through high-speed internet, which is so important not only for business and agriculture, but it's really an expectation for young people. If we expect folks to consider living in rural Iowa, they have to be able to be connected. And so this is a long-term process. This is not something that is going to be solved overnight. If it was easy, it would have already been dealt with. And so we're going to go through, again, over the course of the next weeks and months, a process, and we'll have some further announcements as we go forward.
I think what's really exciting, I was at my, I was down in Osceola last night. I got home, which the theme of their Chamber Development, Clark County Development Corporation annual banquet was "There's no place like home." So I got invited to come back to tell them there's no place like home. That's still home. But there is a lot of interest in this Rural Iowa initiative, and everywhere we go, people are wanting to be a part of it. They want to talk about what they're doing, and last night was no different. I said, we're looking for people to be a part of it. I received 4 to 5 text messages and calls saying, hey, Kim, I want to be a part of it, and they wanted to tell us about the things that they're doing in Osceola and in Clark County, and the more that we can bring that information in, that gives us a better foundation to start from, so we're not stepping over programs that are already taking place, but rather building on the exciting initiatives that we see. They've got a career academy taking place with Alltech down there, the high school and the community college, and they're contributing all kinds of equipment to the high school. Kids are coming out and going right into their business. And so they've got 50 openings in Alltech in Osceola, Iowa right now. They had, this is a go Osceola thing, but got to be proud of your hometown. They went from one building permit last in 15 to 50 in 16. So good things are happening across the state. Thank you.